Jordan, and this is Yes But Why Podcast. Yeah.
I have always been interested in that part of tourism. What do you do for Lufthansa?
I'm my background is engineering. I studied engineering in Germany, and I started doing that at Lufthansa. I worked for Lufthansa Cargo for 7 years in a role as a project engineer doing high-rise storage base. I don't know if that's the right translation, but that's what I always said when I talk to somebody.
Makes sense.
So it's like, huh?
Makes sense to me.
Okay, yeah. And it was like in a department that took care of those, built new ones. There was huge projects like building a new high-rise storage bay at Frankfurt Airport, and that's how I started at Lufthansa. But then slowly, it kind of grew on me that I wanted to do something else. I already started improv even before I started at Lufthansa, and doing more and more improv professionally. And there's a funny story about me and starting at Lufthansa and starting my job as an engineer. I did assessment centers there, like applying for jobs after I graduated, and the feedback from three or four assessment centers, not only at Lufthansa but also at other companies or big corporations, was, Stefan, you're kind of a stiff guy. You're not funny. So that was the feedback I got.
And that's very nice feedback.
Yeah, I mean, they said it politely, but just bringing it to the point. And there was definitely not my self-image at the time, being on stage like twice a month, getting laughs from the audience. You know how it is. You get real feedback from the audience, so they wouldn't laugh about you if you weren't funny. And they don't do that out of politeness normally. So it didn't fit my self-image. And then it took me, I think, 1 year or 2 years to realize I have two personalities. There's the one personality that is on stage. And then there's the second personality who is the rational engineer, and who wants to create an image of himself as being a rational engineer. And I was kind of like intimidated by the corporate world. Most of my colleagues were a lot older than me, a lot more experienced, really, really experienced people there. So there was two personalities, and both were me, but it felt kind of weird. So I started bringing improv to Lufthansa or to my work. And slowly my job evolved into something different. I did a lot of side projects that involved improv or facilitation. And after a while, I started more and more work there. And then I met my future boss, or my current boss, and he said, like, do you want to, you should switch to HR. So now I'm in HR and doing corporate culture there. So digital transformation is the buzzword about it. That's my role at Lufthansa.
Huh.
And I love it.
What a transformation.
Yeah. And it's weird. It's like a Jekyll and Hyde. It was like a Jekyll and Hyde thing where you, yeah.
Was it hard to try to separate yourself? Is it better now that you've sort of integrated both parts, the rational and the silly?
Yes, definitely. I wouldn't call it hard. I didn't have like I didn't suffer or anything, but
sure.
It feels a lot better now. It feels a lot more whole now. Like being myself all the way through, And it I recently read the book of Frederic Laloux. You might know it. It's Reinventing Organizations, and he talks about wholeness, like being whole in your job and in your life. And so it feels like I did it just I did exactly that. So not on purpose, but it just happened.
Yeah. Well, I feel like people who write books like that, that talk about something that happened, probably just happened to him too. And then he was
Yeah.
like, hey, guys, you could do this thing? But nobody
Yeah.
really. Everyone's life just happens around them, and we're all just reacting forever.
That's true. Did you have any similar experience in your career?
I mean, I know. I have been a performer since I was born. Since the
Okay.
moment I came into this world, I've been doing bits and posing for the camera and, getting large crowds of people to look at me. Yeah, no, that's me. That's me. Yeah, from the very
Okay.
beginning. My mom was a political gal, and we went to a lot of rallies, and she worked for teachers. And she was a teacher, and she would also like work for the teachers union, and so we did a lot of picket lines and also pushing for some candidate for whatever job in the union, and so I would be wearing all decked out in whatever the message was as a little kid, and I would do like song and dance numbers for the people who came to the rally. It was like my favorite thing to just entertain people in that thing. So no, I've never been two people. I've always been the one person. No one. And also the nice thing about my parents is like they never told me I had to do something like what's the word? You need to get a real job or you need to have a backup plan. They were just like, so you're doing theater? And I was like, yeah. I'm like, great. Awesome. Whatever. That makes sense.
That's great.
Yeah. So I've literally just been doing theater forever and ever and ever. And that's what I do. Yeah. It's an interesting thing actually, to think about. And I talk to people all the time when I'm doing the podcast, I get different people's stories, the way they got into it, and I'm always fascinated. There seems to be, it's such an interesting thing. This idea of like having some sort of solid career versus what you really want to do. And it's like, it's okay. There's a lot of people in the world. They can do it. They'll take care of it. Don't worry. You don't have to cure that disease. There's a bunch of people trying. It's fine.
Yeah, that's true.
Like you do your thing, because your thing maybe could help more. Like maybe you're not great at curing diseases. But maybe you're great at doing something else,
Yeah, true. Totally true.
I don't know, but honestly, what's interesting to me too, being able to speak to improvisers in other countries as well, is the cultural differences. Like, so do you think that you went into engineering because you felt like your family wanted you to, or was it something that you were into? Or, I don't know, like, how did you get into that path
Yeah,
beforehand?
definitely the second. So I wanted to be an engineer, and I still love engineering. So it's actually a part of me. And even in my job now, like technology plays a certain role. It's about digitalization, and I love technology. And what started it was, to be really honest, it was Star Trek, I guess.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
huge huge Star Trek fan, and I was fascinated by the stories of Star Trek, of course, but also by the technology there. And that's what brought me into technology. I had a math and physics chemistry major in high school, and was always fascinated by that. And it interests me. And no, my parents didn't even have anything to do with my career choice as well, I think.
Is that not a thing? Like, do you think, you know, because I feel like a lot of people that I know in the U.S., their parents are always trying to get them to do something specific. You know what I mean? And they're usually rejecting it. So part of doing theater, and what I found, especially in my 20s, was that a huge part of being a theater person is rejecting something.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
When I was younger, that was a lot of it. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't know how old you are, but I was in my like teens in the 90s, and the 90s were a lot about rejecting things. I don't know if you had ever heard the song Sell Out. But there's this song where this band, the story is the band singing a song about how they were playing in small clubs and then got a gig and then they got a record company, a record deal, and they sold out and everyone was mad at them because they sold out. And that's like the thing. And I was like, wait, we're upset that they did well? I don't understand. Why are we sad?
Yeah.
What's going on? So there was a rejection. There was like this, forget it. You want me to be like that? Forget it. I don't know.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
For me, there wasn't anybody telling me no. I mean, there's plenty of people in theater. Like, there'd be different things.
Yeah.
You know, where they'd be like, this is the way that you do this style of theater. And I'd be like, okay, but what about? So that was my rejection.
And I don't think, like, if I look at my friends and family, for example, like what they chose for their career, I was mostly thinking about what they wanted to do. There was probably some bad choices, but but not because of the parents, I guess.
No. Sure. Yeah. Well, we all make still fun bad choices, you know, in the long road to figuring out what the heck we're doing.
But still, there's one anecdote towards that that topic that really struck me. It was there's one movement in Germany. It's called Arbeiterkind, which helps people from non-academic backgrounds, so where the parents don't have an academic background, to get into the academic world, like because they do not get support, which doesn't mean like their parents wouldn't support them, but it's like their parents don't know how it is, so they cannot really help in certain topics. So there's this movement, and we were like coaching people there in this movement, and there were a few actually students coming up, and we said like, did you ever think about going to university? And a few of them replied, no, we don't do that in our family. So this was like, for me, it was totally weird because I've never it was never part of my world, but there's this side as well.
Yeah, interesting. So how did you get into improv? Like, were you doing performing stuff in college while you were, you know, studying science?
No, not really. It was, it started actually in high school, where we had this, our school had a big musical company, but I was always on the music side of that. I was in German you say Orchestergraben, where the musicians sit beneath the stage, I was always admiring the people on stage, secretly admiring the people on stage, but I was stuck there because I was one of the only people who played the piano in this, so I had to play the piano there, after school, some of the people from the company founded their own like student company, and that's when I really got into theater, and we did like normal Shakespeare plays in a non-professional way, that's when I came into contact with improv, because we used improv techniques for like warm up exercises and like just learning techniques for our next play. Then there was a few years pause, and then I wanted to start things again in university. It was about my last or second to last year in university, and I said I need to start again with theater, and I wanted to do like normal theater again, like playing Shakespeare or anything. But I started with improv because I thought, okay, I just get people there to play improv, and then we choose a play, and then we do that. Then I went to my first festival, actually, to my first improv festival, and I never looked back afterwards. It was just love on first sight then, or on, yeah, I mean, with the festival. So that's when I got into improv.
That's great. What festival was it?
It was in Mainz. Mainz is a city in Germany. It's next to Frankfurt. It's very, very close to Frankfurt in the Rhine-Main area. And it was a young festival. It was the first festival ever of the groups there. It was student groups organizing it. It was really, really charming. A lot of people in my age were there. There was a lot of like trying out, experimenting. It was great.
Cool. That's super fun. And when you went, did you just watch the shows, or did you like take workshops and like get in on it?
Yeah, I took workshops, and it was I attended shows as well. And it was the first time I've ever seen long form improv. Like that you could tell emotional stories with improv before. Like, and it's most of the time in Germany, it's when you start improv, You start with games, and you start with all the funny stuff. And then at that festival, it was the first time I've seen like really, really deep emotional scenes and stories. And that's what got me.
Oh, fun. So now do you do short form shows, or do you do long form drama? What's the style that you work in now?
The group that I founded, it's called Kurzform Chaos, which is translated short form chaos. That's how we started. So we also started with short forms, and we still do short form shows. But I would say my real interest lies in long form drama, because that's a style of improv I really want to do. I want to tell stories. I want to see relationships and emotions on stage. I want to experience them. So that's what gets me going there.
Are you like still taking classes or teaching classes? How do you get your long form fix met?
I attend a lot of festivals and workshops, like, for example, last weekend in Würzburg, next weekend in Munich. I did a great workshop with Omar from Mexico about magic realism and mixing realities on stage and like different dimension of realities. It was super duper amazing.
Wow.
It was really inspiring, especially for me as a rational guy. It opened this new world of realism and fantasy and magic. It was really great.
You think of yourself as a rational guy?
Yeah, still I'm still on the rational side. Yeah. even with my transformation I told you about earlier, I'm still on the rational side of things, I would say.
Even with improv, you have to let go of some of that stuff when you do improv, though.
Yeah, and I do, but I think in comparison to some of the players, at least I know, I'm still more on the rational side, I'd say.
You know, I'm a little analytical myself. I teach level one, and so I try to make improv something that I can explain with hard facts. So that way they'll accept it, and then the magic comes in, and then they're enchanted, you know, but they're not walking through the door, you know, without there being some good convincing. And so usually I'm like, solidly, this is what it is, you know, this is how you do it. Here's some basic structures of comedy. Sometimes when I can explain to them, one of my favorite things to do is to talk to my students about the fact that three beats of a joke, doing something three times, is like just a natural rhythm, and that you'll be surprised how much the audience will react to it. And you'll even realize it yourself. Once you, like, feel that rhythm, like, when I watch television or when I watch a show, like, I'm waiting. I'm watching for those. I'm like, oh, yeah, they're going to say it again. What are they going to do? Here is it coming. Okay.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, once you know what you're looking for, you get excited to watch it. And then, you know, beforehand, when you're nervous about what to do, I'm like, here's something to hang your hat on. It'll work. Do it. You know, and it helps. It helps. So while I don't know that I or anyone I know would describe me as rational, I do I do think that I'm very much a structure lover. I love to be able to explain things in a this is basically what you're trying to do. I teach sketch comedy as well, and I use a lot of structure in that. Yeah,
and I totally agree. So I totally find myself in your description, like the trying to explain it by convincing, by using structure and science. I'm a big fan of neuroscience, and trying to get and explain like what is actually happening in your brain when you do it. Like when you get creative, what about the blocks you have there? Where does it come from in your brain? And what happens when you loosen the sensors? And what happens when you are empathetic with other people? What happens then? And the mirror neurons and all that stuff. And I really love to be able to explain it. That gives me a good fundament for teaching. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. No, I love the neuroscience. I don't know as much. I'm listening, you know, listening to everything that you're saying. Like, what? Okay, cool. I don't know all of that, and I'm excited by that. When you do teach classes and include that in the lesson plan?
Yeah, I do. Awesome. It's like... When I teach improv, I always include neuroscience right at the beginning.
Yeah,
It's like what you said about like convincing people, and what I especially talk about is fear in the beginning. Like what happens in your brain when your fear kicks in? Being creative in a social setting, so it's like social anxiety being there. The fear of not being original or fear of being seen as crazy or as obscene, and what can you do to alleviate the fear? And then I say, okay, and now we are doing exercises to do exactly that. Alleviate your fear, just experience the fear first, and then trying to overcome and alleviate it. And it won't get away, at least for me, it will not get away completely. You need the fear a little bit. You need the adrenaline. But it will get a lot better.
Yeah. I like that. I like that idea, the reassurance, but with science. You're like, you will... Your brain will become accustomed to what we're doing.
Yes.
And you will stop feeling so much fear when it comes to doing this. When people say, oh, I'm not afraid to speak in public anymore. It's just because they did it a couple times and got over it.
Yeah, that's true.
So interesting. So interesting. It is funny, and I'm glad to hear, like, number one, I'm fascinated by the neuroscience stuff. If you have a book I can read, I would love the suggestion. No worries to come up with it right now, but
No, I don't have an actual book. I read a lot of like general neuroscience books. Like there's one about the I think it's called Brain. I'm not sure at the moment. I will look it up.
But I have
an abo for a magazine. It's called in Germany. It's called Gehirn und Geist. But it's a magazine about only like neuroscience and psychology, and there's so much input. I read it for about 4 years now, and there's so much input, and even about theater itself. Like they did studies about what happens when you watch theater, and in fact what happens is that you can see in the brains of people watching theater or movies as well, that they really become immersed. They mirror the things that happen on stage or on screen, and there are specified cells in your back, in your spinal cord, that inhibit that you would do it yourself. But you get into a state where you lose your sense of self to a certain degree when you watch something. Mm-hmm. So it's like the immersion is real. It's like you can measure the degree of immersion to that. So that's super interesting.
Yeah. No, it totally is, because I've always felt that way. Like when I watch, you know, movies, or like if I'm watching a series or something, I'll get like super deep into it. And yeah. I'm like, maybe I always just thought it was because I was creatively attuned. Like, I was like, well, I'm just doing theater all the time. I'm just watching this and can soak it up because it's like the muscle in me that's exercised the most.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
You know, but it's fascinating. I thought it was just something that I did. I'm glad that everyone else experiences it too. That's so awesome. It's funny you live your life just being yourself, and you don't know what parts of the world are like just you. And I mean, that's the beauty of like all these conversations I get to have, is that like there's been a lot of times where I'm like, oh, I love the fact that I just realized I'm not a freak. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like in
true.
A nice way. Not that being a freak is bad. I love being a freak, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, you have to have a balance of being a freak in some places, in others.
Yeah, you can't reject everything.
Yeah.
Do you use this? I'm imagining right now, this is what I'm imagining, is like you on a couch in a living room with a coffee table covered with neuroscience magazines, and you're just sitting there reading them. You know, on a Sunday morning with a cup of coffee. Like, this is what I love, the idea of like all these neuroscience magazines everywhere. You're like, I'm figuring it out. Does it help you with human resources too?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it is all about like people and behavior and connection, and like it's all about that psychology. It's basic human resources. Actually, in fact, at Lufthansa, my colleague, I have a tandem partner. I don't know if it's called like that in English, because we're both working part time, so we share a job sharing partner.
Nice.
He's a psychologist. My boss is a psychologist, and my boss's boss is a psychologist. So, yeah, it helps a lot.
Oh, I see. You're reading the magazines just so you can have conversations in the office. I dig it. I get it.
True.
You're like, oh, what am I going to talk about in the break room this morning? Ooh, man. Well, I'm making my toast. I got to say something. You're like, man, that study on the brain. Am I right?
Yeah, but it's not so much what you said. Your image with the
well,
coffee
certainly
table.
Not now with your baby and everything.
Yeah, that's true. So I like for the magazines, I read them when I'm on the go. somewhere. Like, for example, I read one whole magazine on the flight to Stockholm this morning. And other than that, I listen to a lot of audiobooks. That's what you can.
Or I can
try to do it effectively or efficiently.
Yeah, especially when you're, if you're flying around all the time doing jobs. Yeah, that's great. Man, wild. Fun. I love it. I love all the psychology, neuroscience stuff. What a cool, like, way to infuse improv with, like, another fun layer. Oh, so cool.
So yeah, that's true. And then what I, which bridges greatly, which makes a great connection to the topic we wanted to talk about, was also design thinking, right? Like improv and design thinking, or user experience design, and all that stuff, and that there the link is also there, because you have do you know design thinking as a methodology?
I don't know. Explain it to me.
It's like a methodology of developing products or getting insights from customers and developing products in an iterative process. It has three steps. At first, you look at your customers. You're trying to come up with inspiration. And you just have a look at your customer and try to get yourself into the shoes of your customer. So it's actually what we do in improv. It's trying to understand a character, how he is, how he feels, and how he would react to certain things. And it's to get the point of view of the customer. And then the second phase is to ideate, and then there you can get crazy. It's like just coming up with ideas. It's like basic improv stuff. And then you come up with ideas, you prototype them, and you test them, and afterwards you implement the idea. It's like, and then there's one phase. It's called storytelling. So, this is also improv. And then there's this whole process. What I did for the past year is like trying to come up in a way, like, how can you use improv to actually enhance this process? Because the design thinking process itself, it's not new. It's like already a little bit older, but it's to a certain degree, it's at a hype at the moment, in terms of agile product development and agile methodology. So how can you use improv to even make the process better?
That's so great. And are you teaching courses in this? Or is this something that you use with Lufthansa? Or is this an outside project that you're doing on your own?
All three of it is true. So I use it in different contexts. I just finished a certification course for being a UX designer, where design thinking is like at the core of it. And that's when I like within that year that I did it, I really looked into it on where are the similarities and how can you do it. And now I'm starting to teach, to actually teach and use it as a methodology to work on projects with companies. Like companies use the design thinking process to work on ideas, to work on projects they have and on topics they have. And so together with improv and design thinking, I go to companies to work on their projects.
That's so cool. I'm sorry, I'm like blown away. I'm like super fascinated and I'm just taking it in. Wow. What an interesting use of improv. You've really like combined everything, all of the things that you're interested in and have not great knowledge of, and you're using it to make people Wow, build better products here. You're pretty great. That's awesome.
I think that's like that's a theme I love to do, like get to know stuff from different sides and then trying to combine them into one. Maybe it's also part of the story from the beginning, like the rational side and the crazy side, bringing them together. So that's a theme. Maybe that's why I do it, because it just feels good to be like to bring it to one whole thing in the end.
You know, what's funny is I actually think, like, realistically, everybody needs to embrace both sides, and that it's the people that don't acknowledge or, you know, refuse to indulge in one side or the other. Those are the people that go off the deep end and, like, can't handle life in some way. You know, you need a little wild, like, break some rules. It's all right. You'll figure it out. Like, or, hey, you've been breaking too many rules. You need to start, you know, doing stuff in a structured way. It'll make it a little bit easier for you. Like, I think that's such an interesting, I really think that, you know, you get excited when you're young about different ideas, and so you soak up all the learning, and then when you get older, your job is to go over everything that you learned and figure out what you can do with all that information. And not to say that you can't learn continuously throughout your whole life, because I definitely think that you do. But when you're older, like, I'm 40, and when you're a little bit older, I think, like, late 30s, you really start thinking less about, like, me, what do I want? What's going to make me happy? Yeah. And now it's more like, how can I help the world a little bit?
Yeah.
So I wonder if your, like, theory of rational plus crazy equals being whole is really your, like, your personal message that you're, like, you've been tasked with to share and spread, you know, among the people who need to hear it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love the idea of it. Yeah.
That's true.
And also, one image popped up in my head when you told the story. It's like, I had a workshop with Jim Libby. He's an improviser he's actually from the US, but he's now based in Vienna, in Austria. And he said, like, being an improviser is like riding on a horse, and the horse goes into the future, but you sit backwards on the horse and you just collect the things from the past and combine them together. So telling a story with the things that are already there. Don't invent new stuff, like, just combine things that you already have. And I really love the idea, and that image popped up in my head when you told the story.
Yeah. Man, this conversation is way deep. I love it.
Yeah, I love it too.
When you go to workshops, I mean, when you go to festivals now, are you going to perform, or are you going to teach, or both?
Both. And also to just learn. It depends. Like, there are workshops that I teach, but sometimes I only attend a festival just to learn. And then for Würzburg and München, which is happening this week, I perform a show. Like, I applied to the festival with a show format, and then I perform this show. Yeah. So it's all of it to a certain degree.
Do you immerse yourself in it when you're there? Like, do you go to all the parties and go to all the shows and just try to be in it the entire time?
I try to soak it up, but and also to the parties, but being a dad, as you know, you kind of also need your sleep. So I don't stay, like, until the end of the party.
No, I mean, No, absolutely not. Never stay till the end of the party. If you're there at the end, you have to help clean up. You don't want to be there.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And then also at the next day, you won't be happy in your workshop because your brain is messed up.
Yeah, well, that's true, certainly. You got to be careful what any level of consuming alcohol and stuff can mess with you before you're going to use your brain to have an experience.
True. What about you and your festival experiences? Are there actually like a lot of festivals around Texas?
Well, I'm going to be honest. I haven't really gone to too many far away. Like, there's a couple that are in Austin, so I kind of there's a lot of stuff that happens in Austin, so I've pretty much just done improv here and in Louisiana a little bit, as far as like traveling and doing stuff, though. I guess I did go to New York City. The UCB theater has the Del Close Marathon, and I did do that a couple years in a row. So I guess I did go to that. That being said, I'm not a big party person at all. I really don't drink very much. And when I started improv, I was older than everyone, so I never really got into the social scene as much. So even when I went to Del Close the first time, the group I was with we were all around the same age, and so I did party with them a little bit. But the second time I went, my whole group, we were like older, and we were like, yeah, I'm going to go back to the hotel and go to sleep. Like, okay, see you later.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it wasn't, you know, we didn't go to parties. It was like, we performed our show. We like went to a few choice tourist locations, and then we like slept in a, you know, Best Western or whatever, like nothing, nothing too exciting. I do love the idea of, now that I've been talking to people who do so many festivals, I need to start going and immersing myself into it, just really being there and doing absolutely everything. My other thing too is that I've worked a lot of festivals. In fact, I'm working a festival today. It's just, it's how I get myself involved. I've always just tried to be, my first job in theater was stage manager. To do that, so that's how I've gotten in. I've gotten in the backstage of so many theaters and so many events purely by going and getting a job to work there. And it's great.
That's smart.
I've met so many people and been to so many, like I don't go to the parties with the 20 somethings puking on like pool tables in like back alleys of like New York City, but I will go to a random small bar at a summer stock, you know, and like meet George Clooney. That's a story. I'll save that for later. But I guess that is a festival. Now that I'm droning on and on, I'm realizing I have done more festivals, but I didn't do, when I was younger, I did theater, like plays. I started with musicals, and then I did plays, Shakespeare and that kind of stuff. And then I worked as a stage manager at Williamstown Theater Festival, which is like a summer theater festival. Did that for a couple of years, and that was super fun. And that's when I learned how you get a job at the festival, and then you get to go to all the cool parties and meet all the famous people. And, that's how I always meet. If I ever see a famous person, I never walk up excited. I act real cool. Like we're both the same. Like it's like, this place, right? Crazy.
Okay, yeah, I have to remember that.
That being said, if you could see me, you'd see why it always works, because I definitely don't look cool, right? Like I'm not smooth or like hot or whatever, so I'm not like, hey, how's it going? Like I look like your mom or your aunt. Like if any listeners who've never seen me or look at a picture, I'm your mom or your aunt, whoever I am. So if I swing up randomly, and cock my eyebrow at you and go, this place is pretty crazy, huh? You're going to have a nice time. You're going to giggle. It's nothing that you can do. Oh, that's my superpower. I am approachable. So approachable.
But it's also a mindset that you need to have, right?
I don't know.
Like, I think it also comes
for other
with
people, maybe.
Like really, really, really getting what improv is about. Like yes, and like being open, which means being approachable, and so so it's a real virtue.
I think that's why I like improv, because it's a kind art. It wants everyone to be good to each other. It's like it's like pretty much the first rule is like, be cool. Just be nice. Relax. Yeah. Just do it. Don't resist it. Just be in the flow. And that's why I like it so much, because it lets it be. Whatever it is, it lets it be.
True. And 2017 was my year when I started, I just wanted to try Poetry Slam. Is the word Poetry Slam a word that you know in the US?
Yes.
Because sometimes we have weird English expressions that are not known anywhere else.
I've become acutely aware of how many idioms I use when speaking to my international guests, for sure. I use so many, and I don't realize it. But Poetry Slam is definitely a thing. Correct? Okay, let me explain to you what I think of Poetry Slam, and maybe it's the same.
Yeah.
People are doing poetry, right? Often it's very dramatically spoken. And then at the end of the performance, the person is given a rating. 1 through 10.
That's Poetry Slam. Okay, great.
I love it. There were lots of them in the 90s and 2000s in New York City when I lived there, and so that was what I didn't ever do it, but that was the crowd that I hung out with for the first couple of years of my post college life. So tell me about your Poetry Slam.
and what I actually wanted to say is like the community in Poetry Slam is different, and it's inherently different because of the rating, and because it's solo, you do it solo.
It's like stand up comedy.
Yeah, it's like stand up comedy, definitely. I love to think of improv as being collaborative. It's collaborative storytelling, and in stand-up and in poetry it's solo storytelling. I liked the people there, definitely. They were kind, and they weren't like arrogant and stuff, but there was this atmosphere of being solo, which was a little bit weird too when you're used to the improv world.
Yeah, it's funny how that is. There's a lot of different kinds of... I feel like there are times, and maybe it's just people, but like some activities are very solo like that. You have to make your own thing. You have to do your own stuff. Even like in sporting events, like if you think about it, there's a lot of different... Like some sports rely on a team. Everyone has to work together. Yeah. However many of you out there, you've got to work together, as opposed to certain, things that you see mostly in the Olympics, where people are alone. They have to do a whole thing, or like ice skating alone. God, that's crazy. But they have to propel themselves and keep themselves buoyed. And I wonder, I wonder if it's like, the kind of person, like some people just want to go it on their own and some people feel better in groups.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I wonder if the, like, at least here in the US, religion is much less of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
People aren't going to church as often as they used to. When I was growing up, everybody was going to churches. Whatever church you went to church. And now people don't really go. It's not really as prevalent as it used to be. And I wonder if the community of things like improv improv theaters have helped to give someone a place they can go and feel like they have their people and they can have their ritual and they can experience a touch of the divine for a moment and then and then go on with their lives without the old school pomp and circumstance that comes with, you know, religion. I've been thinking about that a lot, actually, just because I see the way people embrace it. And some of these conversations that I've had, even like the one that we're having right now, where we're talking about it in this, like, you know, we're really trying to save the world and like help people be better. And like I love the you know, group that you just decided people need to learn, you know, I want to use this technique that I have to help people build better products. Whatever you want to do, do it. I'm here to help you do it better. And I love that, you know? And I really love corporate improv workshops too, because I think sometimes in that atmosphere, there is an isolation. And I don't know, you know, I don't understand all of the different, you know, kinds of offices, but there's certainly a competition to working in certain industries and, you know, developing stuff. And as opposed to some groups, I'll work with them and I'll be like, oh yeah, they're going to be great. They're going to work collaboratively. And then some people I work with them and they have a nice time, but I know they're all going to go back to their own little cubicles when they go back and they'll they're not going to talk to each other or help, you know? And I don't know. It's just an interesting... People are fascinating.
Definitely, yeah, and I totally agree with you that there are those isolated worlds in the corporate world, yeah. And it's because people also don't want to open up towards each other. I was like also coming back to my story in the beginning, like the rational self-image I had. I have to be the rational engineer, and that's how engineers are. It's the same.
It's funny because I don't know. I think both are needed. You need alone time, and you need collaborative time. It brings me back to your life lesson. Your rational plus crazy. Those words can mean whatever you need them to mean. It's the yin and the yang. It's the, you know, one part needs the other. Like, you have to accept both parts of yourself. Interesting. So fascinating. So just to wrap it up, I want to ask you one more question about your improv performances that you're doing now. Like, you just did one in a festival. You're about to do one. Mm-hmm. What's the thing you're working on with your team right now? Like, what's going on with you guys? What's the kind of show that you're putting on, or what's your favorite part of the show that you get to do, you know, that you did last night and you'll do next week and maybe you'll do in the future?
Yeah. I have two formats that are very close to my heart at the moment. One is science and improv. We're using science, not like to explain stuff on stage, but use science to influence the story. Like, for example, see science in a poetic way. Like, for example, heat means particles are moving faster, and how could this influence the story? With not breaking out from the story, but really influencing the story. Like, for example, there's electricity in the air, and that's why people are connected to each other. So that is one, and it's also coming back to my rational and crazy side. And the second one is a great story that I experienced. It's I have a mailbox at home, and it's a cloud mailbox. So it's in the internet, and it has its own number. And if you want to use it, you just forward your number to this number so you can use it as a mailbox. And people keep calling there. They're called Norbert and Maria. And they want to speak Tanya, but I don't know Tanya. I don't know Norbert. I don't know Maria. And they kept calling now for 2 years and left about 40 messages. they just like tell us a glimpse of their life. They open up a window into their life without telling anything, any personal data about themselves, but just telling stories about themselves. And they are funny, they are sad, they are, you know, there's the whole spectrum. So we use these actually to on stage to tell an appreciative story about Norbert, Maria, and Tanya.
So wait, these people exist?
They really exist, yes.
They're real human beings that randomly called the wrong number.
Yes.
This wasn't like an art project where you were like, here's a phone number, leave a message.
No, it's a true story. It's like it was coincidentally they called. And it's not that they are disconnected now. Some messages are why are you calling back? And I cannot call them back because I don't have their number, and they're not calling my phone directly. They're calling the mailbox directly. And so I cannot reach them. And I was like, oh, it's such a sad story. They never reach each other. But sometimes it's a message like, thank you for being there last week. So they are in fact communicating in real life with each other. They just keep calling the wrong number.
Wow. And you use the conversations to like influence improv scenes?
Yeah, influence the story. We tell a long form story about them. Yeah.
Oh my God, that's so awesome.
It's like a gift, you know? You get this gift.
So funny. I used to be, years ago, I was conservatory director for this theater, and my phone number was everywhere. And I would get phone calls for, students wanting to ask questions or people wanting to ask about the theater. And I would get all sorts of crazy voicemails, and I would save them and just play them in between sketches in my sketch show. But it would usually be like, it'd be like a person who got a wrong number and then just kind of talks about it. Like there was a guy that was like, oh ma'am, this is the wrong number. I did not mean to call you, ma'am. Oh man. What am I going to do? Like, it was just like, why do you hang up the phone? Like, what is happening? You know, he just kept talking, and that was it. I just put it on. And I was like, yep, he gets a spot. But that's so fun. Man, it makes me want you to make a movie with it. But don't, because improv is so much more.
Yeah,
improv
that's true.
is a forever spring of ideas versus, you know, a movie and would just be flat.
That's true, and they are always different when we play the show. Norbert, Maria, and Tanya, they are always different. It's like these alternate universes of them.
I just want them to come to your show.
Yeah, like I always ask at the beginning of the show if they are here.
Do you really?
Yes, obviously. I ask, but so far they have not been there.
Oh my God. I love the idea that at the beginning of every show you're like, hi, welcome to the show. First question, do we have anyone named Norbert, Maria?
Yes.
Oh my God. That is so funny. I love it. I also love the idea that, like, if they did come, you're like, great, we have these forms for you to sign so we can keep using your voice.
Yeah.
Because it's like, that's the only thing. And of course, you know, it's clearly the litigious nature of the United States that's in my brain, but I'm all like, you could get sued.
I think so, but I read about it before I did it. I read about it, like what's the legal structure or legal background, and at least my idea of it is that I can legally use them because I don't. There is no personal data about them. I even changed I even anonymized it a bit, like with audio programs.
Oh, nice! So you changed their voices a little bit. That's great. That's great. Yeah. Ooh, look at you. So smart. Awesome. It's been great talking to you. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day and taking a break from your business trip to chat with me.
Oh, I loved our conversation. It went by so fast.
Good. I'm so glad. And I hope that anybody listening who is as fascinated as I am by all these concepts can, you know, look them up and start using neuroscience and design thinking and all this other fun stuff to augment your improv life. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.